Hello there, and welcome to a special presentation where we're going to be discussing everything that happened at the Xbox Showcase 2026, the latest, I think, in a run of excellent presentations that we've seen across the summer event season. Joining me to discuss it, first of all, John Linneman, hello.
Rich, today we're starting off with a trailer that begins with an oval circle of the Gear logo, very Super NES, if you will, on a CRT. Those that know will know what I'm talking about, but yes.
Okay. And Oliver McKenzie, hello.
Yes, I'm not quite clued into what John is talking about in the specifics, but I was very taken by this show. I thought it was terrific, so I'm excited to talk about it today.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's kick off with the very beginning of the show, where I guess the tentpole game, so to speak, was Gears of War E-Day, an eagerly awaited game from the Coalition. We've seen very, very little up until now, but now I guess we've seen a whole lot. And John... wow, I think is the single word to summarize that entire presentation. This is absolutely amazing.
As a fan of Gears of War, I'm extremely pleased with what they're seeing. And I think that it's a really nice balance between respecting the game's legacy and also introducing some new elements. And we'll talk about all that. But so this game was shown in kind of two parts at the show. They actually opened the show with a gameplay demo, and then they had that longer, like 27-minute whatever sort of dev diary style video, which I think is very important because it showed a lot more. Because I think the initial demo, it looks very good, but these sorts of night scenes set in a city in an urban environment like this, we've seen a lot of them, and I think they largely look great in games anyway. So what I was seeing here was like, okay, this does look really good, but it doesn't look necessarily a cut above some of the other top tier games. But when you see the 27 minute presentation, you see the wide range of like areas that you explore. Oh yeah, this is definitely a top tier Unreal Engine 5 game. Mm-hmm. It's also one that supports hardware ray tracing, hardware lumen, shall I say, while also aiming for 60 FPS. And I felt that the image quality itself was very clear, right? It was relatively devoid of the usual like smearing and noise that we come to associate with Unreal Engine 5 games that lean heavily on ray tracing. So, and it's just, there's what I really like about this though, actually comes down to some of the gameplay changes and the introduction of like much more robust damage modeling, right? So gameplay wise they've added an ultra low cover, and they seem to have completely rethought the cover system to create something that's a lot faster. So it's, before Gears was kind of like, you know, you lock onto a piece of cover and then you kind of run out of that cover and continue, and it felt good, but by today's standards it could be a little faster. By introducing the faster cover and ability to sort of like move over things as well as climbing and jumping, I don't want to use this comparison in terms of like, don't take this the wrong way, but I'm saying this reminds me more of what Naughty Dog did with like Uncharted 4 and such, where Nathan Drake was very mobile, right? You could jump, you could climb, and it really made the battlefield more vertical. And it feels like they're actually taking that approach here with Gears, which I think is actually a smart move. So that looks good. I think the gunplay looks fun. I saw Cliffy B, the original creator of Gears, was complaining a little bit that it felt like the enemies went down too quickly and that the locusts should be stronger. And I see where he's coming from lore-wise, but I actually think the quicker takedowns from a gameplay perspective is actually just more fun. Unloading tons and tons of rounds into an enemy over and over again, I just don't think is all that fun. So I don't mind that. So I'm happy with that direction. All of that, the level design, great stuff. And then there's the destruction stuff. They showed this off where essentially they've implemented a much more complicated chip damage system, where every object now has like an extra layer of stuff on it, right? Where like, you know, you hit a concrete barrier and you start shooting at it, you'll actually be able to chip off little bits of it in a much more granular way than usual. It doesn't seem to be just breaking off in like large, predictable chunks, which I think is a really nice touch for this game, because these are big dudes like running around with very large weapons. And by the way, seeing Marcus Fenix in normal civilian clothing, it's it still weirds me out, because him and Dom are just, they're just big, beefy dudes, like really beefy. And it just doesn't look right where they're just wearing like jeans and a shirt, right? Because they're so monstrously large, but it's still cool and interesting. But I think they mentioned that Mad World trailer and a specific scene is kind of like the inspiration for what they want to go for. And I think that's pretty important because they are channeling in on that original sort of darker horror-ish vibe of Gears 1. Maybe, like, I think that's what they're going for. We'll see if it actually can pull it off, because that game was very dark. But conceptually, I like what they're saying about this. So it's been a long time, man. I mean, the last Gears 5 was 2019. It has been longer than Naughty Dog since their last game. But I think, like Naughty Dog, they got railroaded into doing, they tried to do something else that didn't work out, and then they went back to Gears, similar to what Naughty Dog tried, the like, the Last of Us multiplayer stuff, and that didn't work. So clearly that had an impact. But what we're seeing here, I mean, this is really like an example of the masters of Unreal Engine, and I do think it bears out. And once you look more closely at all the detail and everything they're doing, it really does showcase itself, I think, as one of the best looking games we've seen running on the engine. And I cannot wait to get my hands on it. But I would also like to hear what you guys have to say about it. So, yeah, why don't you drop in and let us know.
I do think this is, from my perspective, everything that I actually wanted to see from an Unreal Engine 5 game when the engine was first announced. There's a lot going on here that visually you're just taking for granted. You know, for example, the nanite stuff, didn't really see any pop in as such. View distances on some of those street scenes, phenomenal, right? And that's kind of like what you would want from an Unreal Engine 5 game, 60 frames per second. Now, I'm not sure. I suspect we're probably looking at the PC version here.
And it wasn't so locked either, right? Like, a lot of the footage was unstable, but...
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Well, I'd like to know more. I guess that goes into the disclosure thing. There was a lot of stuff that was just labeled in-game, which I think is fine. But, you know, in-game what? I mean, this is the thing, right? Back in the day, I was talking about how I don't mind if, you know, you're using high-end PC, but, you know, we don't want CG trailers. I think a great thing about this entire show is that there was very, very little CG trailers. It was all in-game. In-engine, even in-engine was kind of like scaled back, so to speak, because in-engine can mean anything as well. Maybe this was PC, maybe it was console, but regardless, it did look good. But, you know, I think the point is that, you know, what we really wanted from Unreal Engine 5 has been sort of fully delivered here, and it has been an iterative process, right? So, as I said, you know, stuff like the long draw distances and stuff like that's kind of almost taken for granted now. The destruction side of things, man, this was like off the charts. It was seriously impressive. Like doing this at 60 on an Xbox. Holy crap.
It's interesting, Rich. It made me think about that. And I feel like I haven't seen this since, weirdly enough, the PS3 era. Killzone 2 specifically was really good at this kind of stuff. And this is obviously way more advanced, but like, I felt like beyond that, games kind of stopped doing it. You know what I mean? Like, we just saw a huge reduction in games attempting this sort of stuff. And most damage states were like, okay, here's the damage model, here's the non-damage model, and just kind of swap them or just break it in one big, you know, chunk, and you don't get that granularity. And I think that makes a big difference to the impact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's often been said that the from the ground up catchphrase is kind of like meaningless, but I honestly do think this probably was done completely from the ground up, from the empty hard drive, as they said. And I think it's going to bear fruit. I'm just really, really interested in this. Even the co-op side of things just seemed like really, really impressive as well, in terms of like the way the levels are designed for different approaches, and you can like use co-op to explore them all. I think that was great as well. Oliver, curious about your take on this.
Yeah, actually, the chip damage reminded me a lot of Gears of War 2, because they implemented a similar kind of system for that game. A lot of destruction in that game, actually. But then they kind of shied away from it for subsequent series entries, I think, or like did not feature it as extensively as in Gears 2. So it's an interesting return, a very triumphant return to that kind of model. I would also agree, like, the performance level on this footage, it's interesting, because the initial, like, 10 minutes they showed off, those kind of nighttime scenes, that was running at a pretty consistent 60 FPS. The cutscenes were a little bit shakier, but like it was running it at a very consistent update. The other footage in the game was a little bit messier, specifically like the footage they were showing off in the direct segment, in that kind of video documentary segment. So I'm not really sure what that's representative of necessarily. The initial footage at least did look pretty representative of, I think, Xbox Target or Xbox, because it did exhibit some aliasing. It was not a totally clean, pristine presentation. I'm not sure what the rest of the footage was captured from, if that's from the Xbox build or the PC build or whatever, but obviously they have some time to optimize this game, so I wouldn't read too closely into that, because this is arriving in like 4 or 5 months now, so it's not too striking there. But yeah, this is a very pretty game, Unreal Engine 5 with hardware ray tracing, as they stated. And you can actually see evidence of that in this trailer or in this footage, because they showed off a couple of shots in the video documentary segment where Marcus is clearly reflected, like glass, for instance, in a car, which could not be achieved with SSR and could not be achieved with software lumen, because software lumen does not represent that at all, right? Does not represent skin meshes at all. So this is really good. And I kind of wonder if we're going to see a wave of hardware lumen titles hit consoles and PCs, because software lumen has not really been iterated on too much, as far as I understand it. In more recent Unreal Engine versions, it's really hardware lumen that's been optimized into a state that could be shippable. So who knows? Maybe we'll see more of those titles coming in the mix here. But yeah, I am really quite taken by this showing, because I feel like they showed the best of both worlds for a showing like this. Like, they showed off very extended gameplay, 10 minutes of basically uninterrupted gameplay. And they also had more of the video documentary stuff, which does work well, but again, seeing that nicer slice of the actual game running, pretty cool. And I would also note one thing that I thought was curious that I noticed a couple people picked up online, which is the game itself is set in Kelowna. Now, Kelowna is spelled K-A-L-O-N-A, so it should be Kelowna, perhaps, but they pronounce it Kelowna. And that's actually a town that's very close to Vancouver, where I live and where these developers are located. It's also the town that I grew up in. So it was a little bit disarming hearing the developers talk about, you know, a brutal attack on Kelowna and a war in Kelowna. It's like a little bit off-putting. But I think it's probably to some degree coincidence, because apparently there is an in-universe Kelowna ship or something, and they've kind of said, oh, well, maybe this is the name of the town, and the town is named after this new figure they've come up with for this game. But I have to imagine that probably played into it, or at least it's very odd hearing them say, like, Kelowna in that specific pronunciation over and over and over again. A little bit disarming. But yeah, cool showing. One of the best showings I've seen for any game in a long time, because I really feel like they covered all the possible bases. And outside of that one brief tease, we have not seen anything from this game. And I think kind of announcing a game triumphantly, putting out all this material about it, really does show a lot of confidence in the product here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, there's been quite a few games where we've not seen a huge amount of the game. And then, you know, we're getting a blowout just before release. And I think the approach kind of works. I think, you know, going back to the Xbox showcase, the Plague Tale game, for example, we kind of saw something like an in-engine trailer a while back. But, you know, now we're actually seeing the full thing just prior to release has real impact, I think. Gears of War E-Day, I mean, the level of technical excellence we're seeing here, I just really want to see more on that. Can't wait to see more. It is, of course, announced as a console exclusive, which we're going to be talking about a bit further on into the show, the whole exclusivity strategy. And I guess at this point, maybe we should talk about the second announced Xbox console exclusive, Clockwork Revolution. John, thoughts on this one?
So yeah, this is an In Exile joint. And given the pedigree and what they're trying to do here, I have no doubt that this is going to be an excellent game. It's, you know, this is one of those ones that's, I think, a little tricky to show, because I feel like you can't get that much out of like just a trailer with a bunch of random snippets, right? Like, whether this is good will depend upon the depth of the experience and how well everything sort of gels together, because it is, you know, very clearly more of a, it has a lot of RPG elements and I gather some MSIM stuff and very shock like if you will, which is very appealing to me. I love there's that scene where he like shoots a little pipe and oil starts spilling out, and then he like catches that on fire, which then burns up the enemy. So there's like little hints of like cool stuff in here, but it's also one game you look at and you're not like, wow, this is amazing. It's more just like, this will probably be amazing. But you know, it's not great for trailer material, if you will, but I have no doubt that this will be a nice game.
Mm-hmm. When you have a signature stylized look,
right?
You kind of need to immerse yourself in the game to get it.
Exactly. And,
Yeah, you're quite right. The trailer side of things is quite difficult to put something across. Oliver.
Yeah, this title does certainly tend to inspire a lot of comparisons with the Shock games, because it does look rather similar to those titles, especially BioShock Infinite, I have to say. Although there are some unique elements to this game, I don't think it's totally fair to just say, hey, this is like BioShock Infinite. They're doing a much more kind of theatrical thing with the puppets. But I think the obvious technical takeaway from this title, at least to me, is that it's Unreal Engine 5, looks very UE5, not perhaps as technically impressive as a couple of the other Unreal Engine 5 titles we've seen in this showcase, including Gears of War E-Day. Not that you'd expect that from a studio like this, but, you know, Unreal Engine 5 has its advantages. The title has very good-looking lighting, generally looks very competent. I mean, performance is kind of unsteady, but again, you would not necessarily expect performance to be totally ironed out in a game that's supposedly releasing in 2027. Now, they have this charming thing they've kind of alluded to, where in prior showings they've said, you know, it'll be released when it's done, you know, when it's ready, that kind of classic parlance. But in this case, they've actually said, you know, coming in due time. Actually, it's coming in 2027, so they have announced a formal date for this game, despite their reticence to do so earlier. But the other interesting thing about this title, and something that was really kind of remarkable to me, is this is another game that's being announced as an Xbox first party exclusive. So we have Gears of War E-Day and Clockwork Revolution. And I'd have to say that it's an interesting decision, because obviously, previously, under the Phil Spencer leadership, games were being ported to many, many different platforms. And that continues apace with many games that were revealed in this showcase that are internal Xbox Game Studios. But in this case, it is being released just for Xbox. So I don't think this indicates a change in direction. There was some commentary, perhaps, that Rich can get into, that Matt Booty stated, where he said maybe we would announce game platforms when we announce the release date for those titles. It's not totally clear this is like a sea change, but it at least indicates a kind of experiment and a kind of reapproachment with platform exclusivity, perhaps trying to drive more of that Xbox brand identity. It's a little bit trickier here when you're looking at AAA titles like Gears of War E-Day, and trying to think about justifying that budget, though, on a platform with an installed base of some like 30-odd million units. That does not really seem like a viable way to go, especially when most of those users are going to be playing your game on Game Pass. You know, I'm not sure how well that goes. These games are day one on Game Pass, unlike the Call of Duties of the world, right? So that is an interesting approach. And I kind of think it might be a short-lived experiment, but we'll have to see how it goes, because it is a considerable change in strategy.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, let's talk about the whole exclusivity thing here, because we've got Gears of War E-Day going to be console exclusive coming this year, and Clockwork Revolution 2027 Xbox exclusive. And the Matt Booty comment is interesting, because it really does suggest, you know, on-the-hoof strategizing on a per-title basis. And I think they're still caught between a rock and a hard place with this thing, because the stated aim, according to the Bloomberg interview with Asha Sharma, was to become the number one entertainment company, certainly the number one games publisher, right? And the way to do that is to basically sell as many games as possible. At the same time, they're looking to strengthen Xbox as a platform, as an ecosystem, and it's basically considered at this point that you need exclusive content in order to create that. And if you think about any other form of media, kind of makes sense, right? You know, Netflix, for example, you're not going to be seeing too many Netflix titles appear on, you know, Amazon Prime or whatever, or Apple TV. Apple TV, you know, they've built an amazing platform there based on quality content that you can't see anywhere else. And how does that translate to this Xbox strategy? Because I'm not seeing it. If you're picking and choosing the games that are going to be appearing elsewhere, that doesn't quite work for me. And if you're sort of making up the rules, so to speak, on a title by title basis, that doesn't really work for me either. The Sony strategy, you know, although I'm kind of personally not too keen on it, makes perfect sense. It's clearly delineated. Narrative story driven content is going to be on PlayStation only. Games that require a big audience that are built to be, you know, enjoyed across multiple systems, they're coming out, like live service games, they'll come out on practically everything. That kind of makes sense. A title by title basis doesn't really make sense. What is the purpose of creating exclusivity? You know, they've started stated, it's basically to, you know, to make Xbox a destination and Xbox console a destination. But if only a very, very limited amount of the games are going to appear exclusively on Xbox, is that going to change the tide? Does exclusivity work anyway? Because Microsoft has tried it before and they veered away from that strategy. How, you know, is this just experimental? Are we going back to the experimental phase? Because the experiment was tried and the conclusion was, well, we should probably put our games on all systems. And now we're kind of rowing back on that. Obviously, the core Xbox audience, you know, the core Xbox console audience, fully on board with this, right? And I can see that Microsoft had to make some sort of, they had to make statements, right, to get these guys back on side, because quite rightfully there were doubts about the core identity of the brand if you're not focused on a reference platform. I'm not too sure about this, because if the stated aim is to basically make games that will prompt console sales, in the world of a massively expensive Xbox Series X and a Series S that doesn't offer enough value, how are these two games or however many more games that come going to make a difference there? I can't really see it. Is the strategy to kind of like double down on the PC side of the equation? I don't know. John, we were speaking about this earlier. You described this as a very big mistake. I'm curious as to what you think.
Well,
about this.
Well, first let me frame. I'm quite in favor of console exclusives, and I don't mind seeing that. That's not the issue here. I think the issue here is I think this specific strategy and the way they're approaching it is not good, and I don't fully understand what they're trying to do. First of all, I would argue that if they wanted to make this work, I do think long term, they would essentially need two publishing arms, right? Or at least name-wise. I think having, say, Microsoft Game Studios, which would indicate everything under this, maybe Activision as well, you know what I mean? This is all multi-platform. But then if you do anything that's specifically Xbox Game Studios, that is just for Xbox and PC. I think something like that would at least help in terms of clarity, because right now everybody's left like wondering, like, wait, what's going to be exclusive, what's not? So I think the issue here is that Xbox Series as a platform is relatively limited in terms of its install base. It's comparable to something like Nintendo 64, and it's a far cry from where Nintendo and Sony have been, and in fact, prior Xboxes. So they are well below that, which is why I feel like for this to work, they're kind of, well, I think they're wasting their strategy on a six-year-old platform with a relatively meager install base that they almost tried to kill. Like, if you've seen the in-store representation of Xbox, it's very bad. Like, it's mostly disappeared from shelves, at least here in Europe and certainly in Japan. Like, you just don't see Xbox. And even based on my experience in the US, it's just not that common, right? It feels like it's disappeared and they gave up. So I think trying to do this again with the existing system is kind of weird. And I feel like they should have been saving this for Helix, right? Make this strong first impression, like, okay, this is what we're doing. This is the vision for the next generation. And these are the things we're doing for it, rather than just like, you know, going one way and then changing direction and then changing direction again and being wishy-washy about what goes where, especially when the hardcore fans of any platform, they're not going anywhere. Right? The Xbox fans would get it regardless. It's not going to affect their purchasing decision. It's the same with like giving all the Xbox influencers like that 25th anniversary Xbox. I don't see anything wrong with that in terms of like, you know, whatever, like it's a fun little bonus, but like they're just giving stuff to the same fans that they always had. Those aren't the people they need to convince that Xbox is great. And I don't think any of this stuff moves the needle for the rest of the people, especially now. I mean, they're trying this again at a time when all the consoles cost more than they did at launch, right? Which kind of sucks, which then ties right back into this idea that maybe they shouldn't be doing this on the Series console and they should save this kind of concept and maybe moving back towards full exclusivity for the future, you know, because I feel like the risk here and the reason I'm concerned about it is actually the health of the studios, right? For In Exile, like Clockwork, I feel like, is a game that like that does not move any needles. Nobody's buying an Xbox to play that game. Very few people, I would say. This is a very interesting looking game, but it's not the kind of thing that gets hype and sells systems. Gears used to be that, but I think we've heard that Gears 4 and 5 already somewhat underperformed relative to expectations, and this is the point where they need Gears to come back and be big. And I feel like they could have opened the door towards a huge audience by launching on all platforms there. That would have been beneficial to the success of the game, because they're right back in that same problem where they've got this reliance on Game Pass, which it doesn't seem to work, as we found out and talked to many developers over the years. Like, the results just aren't what you would want, and it does have a negative effect on the success of these games. So I don't want these games to come out, underperform, and then Microsoft says, oh, we're going to chop these studios, or we're going to cut them down, or here's a bunch more layoffs and stuff like that. We don't need that. So I don't know. So that's kind of where I'm at, where it's like, I like exclusivity. I want to see Xbox go back to exclusivity, but I think they're doing it the wrong way, and I think they're doing it too early. And the strategy feels mixed. Like, they're just going back to the old stuff again, and we really need to... They need a new strategy, I think, to make this work. And I think there's still room for that. So I hope they can figure this out. And I hope that I do think they are in this transition period, and it's not easy. I don't blame them. They're trying things. They're trying what they can. But I think this may not work out. We'll see.
Well, there's an elephant in the room that some people may not be aware of. And it's this. It's that the concept of the console is that the appeal of it is limited to the same people generation upon generation. There have been multiple attempts to kind of expand the total addressable audience. But the reality is it's the same people buying the consoles generation upon generation, right? So now we're at the point where we're, you know, into the sixth year of these particular consoles. Everybody who's got a PlayStation at this point is happy with their PlayStation. They're probably not going to buy an Xbox Series machine, even for a game that looks as phenomenal as Gears of War, right? That means that you're left with the people that haven't bought a console yet. And as we saw recently, there was a figure announced last week that since the price rise in the UK, since the price rise of the PlayStation 5, the sold through units have halved, right? The obvious conclusion is that these consoles are just too expensive to appeal to the more mainstream gamer that typically jumps on board the consoles much later on in the life cycle when the price is right. The price is not right. So basically, yeah, I don't quite understand. I mean, with Gears of War E-Day and Clockwork Revolution, Microsoft has basically locked out a potential 90 million console users from enjoying that game and buying that game, crucially, because a lot of the gamers on Xbox are not going to be buying that game. They're going to be essentially subscribing to a service that provides it. So the strategy escapes me at the moment. I can only think that Xbox is trying to re-engage with the core audience by making moves that appeal to them.
Right.
And realizing that there will be a financial hit for doing so, but they think ultimately it is worth it.
I feel like they never lost those fans. They always had those original Xbox fans, and every console has its fans. So I feel like they didn't need to necessarily cater to them. Right? Like, that's not what will determine the success. I think fundamentally it's like, do you want to pay more for a 6-year-old console than when it came out? And I think we're seeing most people don't want to do that. It's affecting PlayStation 5 as well. It's too expensive. If they could like say, hey, now Xbox Series X is $399 or something, which I don't see how that's possible in this economy, that would actually probably move the needle of some, at least, right? But as it is, it's not. But that's our thoughts for now.
Yeah, there's a lot more to talk about on that one. But let's just crack on. Let's move on. Halo campaign evolved. The original Halo modernized. Unreal Engine 5. We saw some footage a while back. Had promise. But also we saw some issues with that. There was a brand new presentation here, which, John, I thought looked Really, really impressive. Really impressive presentation there. I actually think that whoever did the edit on that deserves a lot of kudos as well. In fact, across the whole show, the editing was just fantastic. I'm curious what you make about this.
Yeah, so this is actually something I'm deeply excited for. As a big fan of Halo, like Halo Combat Evolved is one of my favorite games of all time, for sure. But I felt that the original Anniversary Edition did not do it justice. It just didn't look the part. This, I like the art they're doing here. It's very bright. It's got the color, the vibrancy. Like Halo 1 is a game with a lot of like beautiful purples and blues and these strong colors and there's gorgeous skyboxes with all the swirls of green and purple and blue. And it's just, it's in the Covenant's striking appearance. They've got all of that here and it looks phenomenally good. It's also the first time I feel like we're seeing a real significant increase in Halo rendering quality, right?
Right.
Because it's kind of been stuck in that 343, that whatever their engine was, I forget the name, look that all of those games had.
Slipspace, I think?
Subspace or Slipspace, whatever.
It was Slipspace for Halo Infinite.
Right. Before that, though, you know, Halo 5 was good in 60 FPS, but like Halo 4 or 5, very good looking games, but they all tied back to that older style of rendering from the Halo 4 era, I would say. This feels like a genuine leap. And the lighting here is striking, more so than usual for an Unreal Engine game. Like, it's just the materials, lighting, everything, it's very, very appealing. And I'm curious to see how this plays out in the game. And I think it's pretty clear, maybe they'll prove me wrong, but this feels like this was not built on the skeleton of the original game, right? And I think that's fun, but I'm happy they're not just grafting new graphics onto the original design and instead seem to be taking a slightly different approach here. So this almost feels like a pseudo, I don't know, this is like getting into that territory of a Capcom quality remake, right? Like like a Resi 4 or something, where you look at that, mm-hmm. it's like that's basically a new game derived from the original. And that's kind of the vibe I'm getting here. And I really think this is a huge improvement over what we first saw with it. So I'm very, very, very excited for this. Just, it's been a while. Mm-hmm. And I look forward to co-oping it with my son, because it was one of the first games we ever played together was Halo.
Oliver, what do you think?
Yes. High praise from John. And I'm inclined to agree, at least broadly speaking, because this looks, I think it looks incredible, honestly. I think it looks incredible, especially the cinematics, which remind me of the quality level almost of the Halo 2 Anniversary CGI cinematics. Not quite at that level.
Yep.
But like really, really impressive stuff. Just like crazy, crazy stuff. I think they've captured the spirit of all the areas depicted in the original, or all the content depicted in the original, I guess, kinds of content, because this is showing off obviously the new mission, so it's not totally the same content here. But they're building and experimenting on top of that original art, which I kind of find quite striking, because a lot of people were making notes that, hey, this doesn't match the original perfectly. But I think when you're talking about the technology that was made 25 years ago, I'm sure people would have made very different decisions nowadays. And I actually like they're doing something a little bit different with it, glossier with it, a little bit more exciting. And I'm also happy they're showing off new gameplay content here, because otherwise this would be a little bit of a more boring remake. But they are putting in lots of new gameplay content, redesigning areas, adding new weapons, missions, obviously really cool stuff. So I'm looking forward to this. The only note that I would sound here possibly is obviously the quite early footage we saw last year that did exhibit some pretty profound stuttering issues. And I don't know that we're seeing similar content here. So that's kind of just a note. We'll see if that's resolved in the final game. But yeah, so far this is looking quite promising. This is a very pretty Unreal Engine game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was cinematic heavy, but you got these like glimpses of gameplay that just look phenomenal. So I'm really hyped by this. I really hope they deliver, because the potential here is sort of off the charts. And certainly the visuals that we're seeing here really, really do look very, very special. I guess the good news is available July 28th. We don't have too long to wait until, you know, the game's actually out there. So yes, that's very good as well.
Yeah.
Let's move on. Oliver, mm-hmm. you're excited. Persona 4 Revival, Persona 6, both revealed in the showcase. This must make you a very happy individual.
Well, it's quite good. It's quite good. Persona 6, maybe I'll start there. So Persona 6, there's not really much to go on in that one.
Yeah.
You know, they show off this like really weird green-tinted graveyard set sequence, kind of showing off maybe some of the themes of the game, maybe some of the kind of graphic design art of the game later on. You don't really get much of an impression as to what it's about exactly. Now, they've provided some additional context, which is to say that it's still set in the school, but it has some occult themes now. Maybe harkening back to earlier Persona games, which did have more of those occult elements, which would be interesting. I would really like to see something more substantial than this, but Atlus, when they tease games, they often tease them without showing off very much. That was certainly what they did with Persona 5 as well. And I'm not really sure what the release date is on this game. They did indicate that it would be after Persona 4 Revival, rather. So probably later in 2027 or 2028, I have to imagine. This has been in development for a very long time. I think like 6 years now. And they did, it did seem to be, at least based on various reporting and various leaks, to be further on in development than a lot of people realize. So hopefully it'll be out sooner there other than later. But Persona 4 Revival is coming out a little bit sooner. That's coming out in February 2027. And I'm really liking what I see here. There's a lot of discourse online about it that's a little bit more negative, but I actually quite like it. It has all the elements of Persona 3 Reload that I liked, like the great menu designs, user interface stuff, striking characters, great cinematic sequences. But the environmental art seems to be taken to another level in terms of density, and certainly in terms of lighting quality, which I quite like. I assume this is Unreal based on the prior games. That would make a lot of sense here. Just scanning through the trailer for tech, I mean, I did notice some screen space issues with some reflections at one point. You know, Persona 3 Reload did have arty reflections. I don't know if they'd bring anything like that in here. Presumably this is going to be on UE5 or something. I mean, maybe this is reaching a little bit too much, but, you know, it would be interesting to see something like that. Gameplay-wise, this is a remake of Persona 4 Golden, which makes sense because that's the most complete version of the game. There's no dispute this time about which version is correct or which version should you remake. There's really no issue there. It is clearly the complete version of the game, and they're going with that version. And they've added gameplay systems to the game that make it more similar to those more recent Persona titles. And they've also added some new events to the game. Remains to be seen how significant that will be, but they're talking about possibly adding new seasonal events and new social events and things like that. So I think this is really promising. It's exactly what I wanted. It's taking all the parts of Persona 3 Reload I liked and getting rid of some of the parts I don't like as much. And I think it's really exciting. I think it's really cool. People are, you know, I do think you need to have a reasonable expectation for kind of certain aspects of these Atlus titles, because they aren't always, you know, technically flawless masterpieces or whatever in terms of the graphical execution. But I think for what it is, this is a very good-looking title that I think will be really exciting when it does come out early next year.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Persona isn't really on my radar, John. Curious if you have any thoughts on this.
Oh, it's on my radar. I finally, I also played through Persona Reload, 3 Reload, mm-hmm. and I really enjoyed it. I actually specifically played through the Japanese version. That was my first time going through Persona 3 at all, having only mm-hmm. played through Persona 4 Golden on the Vita before that. So I'm happy to see 4 remade. I don't know if I'll go through it again because it is a massive game and Persona 3 took me like over a year to beat, like just playing it. It's not like I was playing it the only game I was playing, but it was a long freaking game, dude. So these take a lot out of you.
It took me a couple months.
So
it took me a while.
Yeah, man, it's a lot, dude. But I'm happy that we finally got an announcement for 6. It's been a very, very, very long time. So obviously they haven't revealed much, but yeah, I'm excited for them. And I think it's interesting and cool that Microsoft's managed to cultivate that relationship with these guys. So Sega in general, actually, as we'll see.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good stuff. Well, let's move on. We actually had a debut of the latest in the Hellblade series, just titled Senua. And obviously we were massive fans of Senua's Saga, the second game. Graphics quality there was just off the charts. Gameplay, though, that was a bit more contentious. John, it looks like we're getting a bit more of a balance possibly with this one.
Yes, praise be. I would say Senua's Saga, the second game, is one of the best looking games of the generation by far. Just an amazing Absolutely. Showcase for Unreal Engine. But it was essentially like it's like the evolution of the FMV genre more than anything else. Like it was extremely low on interactivity. So it was really just kind of a tech demo with a cool story and really great atmosphere. But this one looks like it's going in the opposite direction. Like it's continuing with the type of combat we saw more in Hellblade 1, but pushed a bit further overall. And it seems like you can actually fight multiple enemies now at once. And there's just more going on around her. And to the point where this feels like they've got the visual pipeline down. They've got the aesthetic down. This is them hopefully sort of dialing it in and be like, all right, how can we expand this to make this a more involved, more complex game? Right. And I hope they pull it off. Cause yeah, I've enjoyed these experiences, especially they're one of the only developers that actually has tackled audio using binaural audio, right, with an actual binaural recording system. So if you wear headphones, you get true spatial audio in a way that very, very few other games can ever match. So I hope they bring that back as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oliver?
Well, I'm quite taken by this title. I don't know that they did a great job at showcasing this in the trailer itself, but they are talking about a broader game that's more of an action-adventure style game, with agency and broader gameplay in an interconnected world with one continuous map. So it's not an open world game necessarily, but it sounds like it might be something more like God of War, where you can go from end to end without loading screens, without kind of transitions, things like that. And yeah, you can fight multiple enemies at once now. They're also talking about environmental interaction, more traversal, verticality, lots of elements to this game that were basically absent in the prior title. The first game had a little bit more of that, but like, really, this does sound expanded and much more like a kind of AAA action-adventure title we might expect from something like Sony, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Although, again, that's just going off of their commentary, and it's not really shown off in this trailer as much. And apparently they have everyone in the studio working on this game. They've shelved Project Mara, which was kind of like their experimental horror title that was in development for now. And that's probably a good thing based on this trailer. And like, also this speaks to like considerable production efficiency, because they're delivering this game in like 3 years since the last title, which just speaks to like, hey, we're up to date on these tools. You know, you can actually build apparently a really high fidelity Unreal Engine game like this in a relatively short span of time if you just have the tools under your belt and the experience with the software. Because like, I think Hellblade 2 took like a 5 year development span, something like that. This is a much quicker turnaround, and apparently for a game that is much broader than Hellblade, than the second Hellblade title. So that's really exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that was my point as well. I was not expecting a new Ninja Theory game of this quality to arrive next year.
Me neither.
And yet here it is. And I guess my second comment is just look at it. Holy crap, that's amazing. I think that's been a kind of signature of all of the summer events we've seen so far, is that the visual bar seems to have risen, which I think is fantastic. Yeah. I think before the summer events, I was kind of a bit worried about the future of the games industry and an incoming crunch, so to speak, about, you know, something's got to give. Quality may have to be lessened in order to make these games viable. But we've just had like banger after banger after banger, and this one coming along, it just looks phenomenal. It's just really looking forward to seeing more. Let's move on to our next selected title. This one had, I'd say, a very interesting but short presentation, and it's kind of weird bearing in mind it's slated to arrive next year. Oliver, let's talk about Spyro: A Realm Beyond.
Yeah, I'm not sure there's too much to talk about here, because it does seem like this is a very brief tease of a new, I think it's a Toys for Bob Spyro title. They do show off this early sequence that is, you know, probably not representative of something you'd actually see in real time, but does look pretty amazing. Then they show a very short, I think I'm counting it now at about a 8 second segment of gameplay, which appears to show Spyro, kind of a slightly uneven frame right there, but again, that's to be expected for early software, in a kind of open world environment, chasing rings, it seems like, kind of interesting Spyro gameplay. And then you have some kind of lock-on mechanic where you're shooting out fireballs. So that's pretty cool. I actually really, really enjoyed the Spyro. I think it was the Reignited Trilogy.
Yeah.
They did Spyro 1, 2, and 3 in one collection. That was on last-gen consoles and PC. Quite a good game. I've actually been replaying that on PC a little bit more recently, and it's quite a good adventure. Still holds up quite well. I am interested to see what they would do with this title, and obviously in a much broader context, in the context of a series that is not wedded to PS1 hardware. You know, that would be pretty interesting to see, at least in the modern era. So I'm quite taken by this, but yeah, I think it's interesting to see where they go with these kinds of projects, because like we saw something similar with Crash 4, right? I'm not sure we've seen any kind of movement there. But I do enjoy non-Nintendo platformers, and this is one of the very best series out there to reinvigorate.
John, there's not actually much of substance to comment on here. Those 8 seconds of actual gameplay look to be like Pilot Wings.
Oh, I was thinking more like Panzer Dragoon, but with Spyro. It's like happy, purpley Panzer Dragoon. I mean, I guess the only thing I can glean from that is it does seem open world. Like a larger map,
right,
as opposed to like linear sort of level, but who knows? I'm not like a gigantic fan of Spyro, but I did enjoy the Reignited Trilogy, and I recognize that those originals they're solid games, especially on the original PlayStation. The actual, like, the technical work that Insomniac did on the PS1 was phenomenal. Like, the size, scope, and fluidity of those games was a match for big N64 3D platformers, which is a tall order, due to how those two systems worked so differently, right? So, cool. I'm interested. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
Okay. And we've got to talk about Metro 2039 because, you know, this is everything we love. You know, bespoke technology, cutting-edge rendering, amazing artistry. Man, this is looking very, very impressive. I'm going to go to you first on this one, Oliver.
Yeah, I'm quite taken by this trailer. We saw a very brief snippet of gameplay. I think a couple months ago where they were just showing off Metro 2239 for the first time. But this is a much more complete showing where we're seeing a variety of environments, albeit all fairly desolate and upsetting and, you know, depicting similar kinds of game content here. But I think this looks terrific. I think this looks amazing. I'm not really sure about the provenance of this footage. It's running on, it's running at 60 FPS quite clearly. But, you know, I would expect a really exciting game from a visual perspective on the 4A Games engine here. And it does look very pretty throughout. I mean, it's very drab. There are not a whole lot of differences in lighting conditions here. It's very overcast, I would say. And then there are some nighttime sequences, which, like John said earlier, you know, that's a little bit harder to glean the technical performance of a game based on nighttime sequences. But I think it does look striking, albeit perhaps a little bit, possibly a little drabber than Metro Exodus, which had a wider range of environments, at least based on what we're seeing in this footage. But this certainly does capture that kind of oppressive Eastern European atmosphere quite effectively, I would say.
Yeah, I'm going to be interested to see how, you know, I'm assuming this is PC. I think, you know,
right,
for a lot of the presentation, it was PC. And there was that kind of Easter egg in the first presentation that kind of suggested that Xbox or the consoles rather would be 30. I'm curious what you make of this, John.
Oh, I don't know about the 30 part, but I do think the visuals here are, on the face of it, among the best I've ever seen, just in terms of raw detail. Like, it's really, yeah, really good looking, which is kind of like, yeah, that's what 4A Games does, right? Like, they are known for their top tier visuals, pushing the envelope. Seems to be doing that again. And based on that original presentation, I have some hope for this one. I liked the previous games, but I hated the way they told the story. Like, it was usually just, right, like 20 minutes standing in a room with everybody going, "Artyom, we should go do this." And it's just like, you know, you're stuck. And it was like, I don't mind silent protagonists, but you look at what Half-Life does and the pacing of their scenes versus Metro, like especially Exodus, where it's just, it's intolerable, man. I hated it. Like, this seems like a they're completely shifting gears in terms of how they're telling the story. And I think that's really, really interesting. Combine that with the beautiful visuals. And, you know, I think Metro has always played well and had a lot of good stuff going on. So I am definitely interested. Interestingly, when this first was shown some months ago, I was staying in the US and I actually showed the video to my dad, who was like extremely interested in this. He's like, "So what would it take to play this? Does my Xbox play this?" He has an Xbox One S. Okay. So I was like, "I don't think so," but because he played Battlefield 1 for a while, so he likes some of these military like games in this, and he was fascinated, mm-hmm, by the Ukraine connection and all that. So I'm also interested.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Let's move on and jump over to a game that is completely different.
very, very different.
The return, the long-awaited return of Crazy Taxi there, John.
Oh, man, this is both awesome but also potentially concerning. The concerning part being the mention of Gen AI used in the Steam page, which I do not like to see. I don't know how that's going to influence the game. I would also say the CGI work looks terrible. It looks like Fortnite. But then they cut to the gameplay. And that right. does look good. I really like the way the game itself looks. The colors are super vibrant and bright, like bright, intense yellows, like that beautiful Sega blue sky. An art style that feels like an evolution of the original designs, but obviously we've never seen a city with this complexity. The stacked pizza boxes made me think about potential for some of the missions they'll be doing. We don't yet know like how this is all going to be structured and what the game's going to be like. They did sort of show some of the original San Francisco themed locations, which I thought was cool. So I'm very hopeful, but I have a lot of questions still. And yeah, that Fortnite CGI, no thanks. I hope that's just like promotional stuff, because it's, you know, and yeah, the AI stuff as well. But I don't know, Oliver, you don't mind the AI stuff, obviously. So you're probably like more excited for it, actually. But what did you think of this?
Well, you know, I guess it depends on how they're using. I mean, what they indicated from their disclosure is they're using it for background assets, which, you know, people have different opinions on that, and they're using it for game performances. I don't really take this as like, you know, this is some AI-generated game that's clearly being used in probably a small part of this production. But, you know, this is an interesting title. It has like a campaign mode, apparently, and it has online multiplayer, which is also interesting. We've never seen that before from a Crazy Taxi game, obviously. Mm-hmm. And it's doing some interesting things they've described here. But I think this looks quite pleasing, just in terms of the visual presentation. I'd have to imagine it's Unreal, because almost everything is these days. Because mm-hmm. Sega kind of tends to use Unreal.
Motion blur looks very Unreal. That's kind of a tell.
Motion blur looks very Unreal. I'd also say there's some good indication there's RT reflections here, just because of the preservation of off-screen information in things like, you know, a character being reflected in a mirror or something like that. I'm noticing that here. And it's certainly artifact patterns look quite RT. The cinematics, I don't know if those are in Unreal or what they're doing there. They do look pre-rendered. I don't know exactly if that's just promotional material or if that will actually be reflected in cinematics that occur within the game. I kind of hope that they're not in the game, because I do agree with John that they do look a little bit generic would be the term I would use politely. But Fortnite style or whatever would also be another term that you could use. But yeah, I'm quite pleased by this. Looks like a really fun game. I'm excited to dive into this one. I can't remember the last time I played Crazy Taxi. It must have been decades ago. But
for me, it was literally like a month ago.
A month ago, of course. I'm pretty into this. I could be into this for sure.
Mm-hmm. I think the great thing about this is that it stood out. Well, certainly the gameplay elements stood out, because, you know, you just don't get games like this anymore. And I miss them.
I also miss them.
There were like, I don't know, a lot of the trailer just didn't really impress me, particularly like the cinematics and stuff. But then you get these like, you know, 2-second snippets of gameplay that look like a really good time. And that's kind of what I'm hoping for from this one. But let's move on. Let's talk about, interesting, the expansion to Doom the Dark Ages, Doom the Dark Ages Revelations. John, what was your takeaway from this presentation?
I've been waiting for this. I'm happy it's only a month away. Love Doom the Dark Ages. It's probably my second favorite of the Doom reboot trilogy, with Eternal now being my current reigning supreme favorite. Eternal on Nightmare specifically is truly amazing. What an incredible thing. But Dark Ages, also really good and beautiful. And this looks like a continuation of that, with some new areas, including some sort of snowy spots, I guess you could say. But it's, you know, it's essentially more of what I loved, and for that I'm happy. I guess the one thing I would want to see is an increase in the challenge level, because I felt that the nightmare mode on this was actually a bit too easy, and the times when you did die felt a bit random. And I'm harping on it specifically because it was that when you play on the very, very challenging nightmare mode on Eternal, it really brought the game to life. Like, it forced you to become it's the meme. You had to get good and really master the controls, especially those challenges. And it just was so incredibly rewarding to play as a result. And Dark Ages never quite got there. I do think they've made the game, they've tweaked it a little bit post-launch, and it is a little bit better in that regard. And I'm hoping that the DLC sort of amps that up a bit. So, but I guess we'll find out really soon. And yeah, I guess it doesn't seem like there's going to be like a two-parter to this either, right? Oh, the one thing I forgot to mention, at one point in the trailer, at about the two-minute mark, I don't know if you guys noticed, and this might be similar to what we saw in Doom 2016, but it looks different. They actually showed a small clip from Map 2 of Doom 2, right?
Right.
But it had the Doom-style geometry, but like full ray tracing, the reflections, fighting the Doom Dark Ages enemies in that. And that specifically made me go like, okay, what the heck is this? Like, is it just like a little hidden piece, or is there something more going on in the story? That's what I want to know. So that was actually the thing that got me the most like interested, just in terms of wondering what's going on, especially because it looks like they brought back the Doom shotgun, which was not in Dark Ages, right? So
right,
yeah.
Interesting. Oliver?
Yeah, I think that's a very tantalizing little prospect there. I kind of hope, like, there were those sequences in Doom 2016 for sure. I'd hope they would bring those out in a better manner, perhaps integrate it into the main story, do something interesting with it. I don't know, like do something really wild. That would be cool. But yeah, overall, I mean, I am kind of curious to see if they do amp up the difficulty level. I share that concern with John, and I also share his great love for Doom Eternal.
Oh, my man.
Doom Remake series title. But I think the Doom Eternal DLC was quite a bit more challenging than the base game, so perhaps this will be the case as well.
It was.
And I actually do find this interesting, because it does seem like maybe they're going a little bit more towards some Doom Eternal conventions here, because these sequences do seem to show off more arena-focused gameplay, which we saw some of in Doom the Dark Ages, but a little bit less of than in Eternal. And also, they seem to show off some kind of weapon that you hold in your left hand here, that can be used as a kind of like shotgun hook analog, where you can latch onto enemies, move around in the air somewhat acrobatically. Maybe it's a bit slower than that. Maybe it's a little bit less directed than that. But it does seem to marry a little bit Doom Eternal's more acrobatic gameplay that is more evasion-based with Doom the Dark Ages, which has a little bit more, you know, ground-oriented gameplay that is more parrying and time-based. Right. I don't think they're getting away from that completely, but it does look like a little bit more of a hybrid between the two games, which I'm actually quite partial to. I think that could be a really interesting change if they do indeed go in that direction, which does seem to at least be the case with this weapon, which seems to be like an omnipresent kind of spear that you have by your side.
Right, right, right.
In this title. So it's interesting to see where they go with that for sure.
Good point, Oliver. I wasn't thinking about that, but yeah, the spear, it's like having two offensive weapons, more offensive weapons like at once. So curious how that plays out.
Okay, just a few more games that we're going to be covering before we close out. But man, the quality keeps on coming, I guess. Woe Long 2, I didn't expect to see this one, Oliver.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, this is another game that has a pretty rapid turnaround, or at least relatively rapid, because I think the first Woe Long game was released in 2023 or thereabouts. I think it was a cross-generation title, Woe Long Fallen Dynasty. This looks good. I have no particular comment on this game. It's not really in my kind of area of enjoyment here, because it was tough as nails. I think I was actually originally assigned this game, Rich, if I recall correctly. But I had to say, hey, give it to Tom. I can't get past the, like, I can barely get past the first boss. This is getting
miserable for me. It's too hard. The same.
Yeah, so we gave it to Tom, and Tom's actually quite good at these games. He's quite fond of them, so he was able to get to show a sufficient amount of video for his coverage. But I was just interested in this title because, you know, presumably this is Katana Engine. I have no reason to believe it's not Katana Engine, and I think it looks quite fetching. I mean, it's not extraordinary relative to some of the other games we've seen in the showcase, but it looks a heck of a lot better than Woe Long. I think it looks better than Rise of the Ronin. Certainly looks a lot better than Stranger of Paradise Final Fantasy Origins, that infamous title that we took a look back at in the day. And this is obviously current-gen exclusive, which, you know, I think Rise of the Ronin was much the same, but I think they have evolved their technology considerably here. So I am, you know, reasonably impressed by this. And if they can hit a good performance level, which is always a bit of a question with these Katana Engine titles, perhaps this will be a technically cromulent title, as you say.
Do we say? I guess
as you say.
John.
Woe long and thanks for the sequel. It's yeah, I'm like Oliver. Like, I didn't actually really play the original Fallen Dynasty, to be honest. And I like some of these games, but I feel like this Koei Tecmo stuff has been running together a little bit for me. Like, I liked Neo,
right.
Neo 2 I enjoyed, but I didn't really play Woe Long, and I didn't play Neo 3. So when I see this, I'm not, like, super excited to play it, but that's okay. I still think what they're showing here looks visually excellent. And I think the original was very well received, so it certainly seems like an excellent game. And these are the types of games where you're like, man, wish I had time to play all the games I'd like to play. But that time does not exist, and you got to pick and choose. But I would understand very much if somebody's excited to play this. So I'm happy it exists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's move on. Let's talk about Resonance, A Plague Legacy, the latest episode of the Plague Tale series. Again, we only saw like a very, very limited amount of footage thus far. It's coming very, very soon. We have a brand new presentation here. Quality looks astonishing. I love these guys. I love Asobo. Proprietary technology. Amazing artistry. This looks like another good one, right, Oliver?
It does. It does. This looks quite extraordinary. I thought A Plague Tale Requiem was one of the really exciting early showcases of technology of this generation, because it was released, I think, in 2022 and was a current generation console exclusive and a third party one, which I don't think we'd seen that practically up until that point. And this looks quite fetching. I do wonder if they're going to embrace ray tracing a little bit more fully on the consoles, or perhaps on PC here. I am seeing evidence of, like, you know, SSR here, maybe shadow maps there, but who knows how the final game will shape up. And this is running at a pretty decent performance level, a couple drops here and there, but quite good. And it does seem to be depicting, you know, pretty wide open environments, good stuff, very pretty title, just like their previous, and obviously developed on internal technology, which we always love to see. So this is looking like a pretty exciting showcase for current generation consoles, and it'll be interesting to see how this shapes up.
Mm-hmm. John?
Yeah, I'm kind of right there with you. I think I really liked the second Plague Tale title. I thought that looked absolutely outstanding, and narratively it was extremely interesting. Plus the mechanics themselves were a bit different. And this also seems to be somewhat different from those prior games, with more of a focus on direct combat, whereas the others are very much stealth driven. And you're dealing with enemies, routing them and trying to get around them and escape things, as opposed to engaging them directly. So I can understand why they want to try their hand at something a little bit more direct. And I respect that, and I'm curious to see what they do with it. So it's like it's a wait and see kind of thing, but I do at least expect that whatever it is, it will be absolutely stunning. Well, interestingly enough, there was a couple points in this where I was like, wait, this looks like Rise Son of Rome remastered or something. You know what I mean?
It does.
Right? The Gladiator bit. I was like, wait, is this Rise? Like, it looks like Rise, which is still a freaking great looking game, by the way. If you haven't seen that in a while.
I mean, I love these guys. Character rendering just looks, again,
superb.
Absolutely superb. I'm hoping this is all fully in-game, but it wouldn't surprise me if it was, based on the previous quality. Interesting that you're talking about ray tracing there, Oliver. I'm not sure about this one in terms of this footage. The PC version of Requiem only had ray trace shadows. It felt like a bit of a bolt-on. You didn't really need it at all, really. So I'm curious to see if they've done more here. In terms of like the setup of the game, it does look as though they're moving to a slightly different balance, right? I think Requiem was it's a great game, but there was a bias more towards narrative, right? And this kind of looks a lot more action-y, or at least that's kind of what they're suggesting in this trailer. I was just thinking back to the Fable trailer that we saw this time around, which was the presentation there, the focus of the elements was very, very different to what we saw in last year's showcase, to the point where it almost looked like a completely different game. But yeah, curious to see what they come up with this one. And again, surprising that the game is coming so soon. I wasn't expecting it to come like this year at all, but there it is, mm-hmm. August 27th. Really looking forward to it. Okay, where do we go from here? I guess we can talk just quickly about, I guess, Xbox fan service and the need for them to reconnect with the community. I think they've done a pretty good job on that. It's kind of made physical in the form of this 25th anniversary console. Now, John, this is something we were talking about earlier, and it's like, okay, I've got an Xbox Series X already, and it's fine. It's a perfectly fine and functional console. I don't have any particular emotional attachment to it, however.
Right.
But I'm seeing this transparent green casing to an otherwise identical console, and I'm kind of like wanting one, even though I've got no real actual reason to need one.
Oh man, yeah, it's so they're kind of modeling it after that dark transparent green version of the original Xbox, which was not the default, by the way, even though I believe the normal quote-unquote black Xbox is actually like a really dark shade of green if you put it under a bright light. So similar to how like the PS Triple is transparent, even though it just looks like, right, like piano black. It's that same kind of weird thing, right? I love that. I do think this looks cool, aside from the fact that the back panel seems to just be normal black plastic, but hey, you're not going to see the back, so whatever. The rest of the console, it's, you know, I kind of miss this like transparent plastic to some degree. It's fun, especially on a system like Xbox Series X, which I think the design is very smart, but it is just kind of this like big piece of plastic, right? With not much design to the front. So like this kind of spices it up in a really cool way that I quite like. And the controller, it looks cool, but I do feel like they missed a trick of including a Duke or a Duke inspired controller in the box. I understand why they wouldn't do that, but that would have been kind of fun. Mm-hmm. I'm just happy that this still has a disc drive, because you know, I know Xbox has given up on physical media for the most part, but it is still very important for backwards compatibility at the very least, right? I have a huge library of Xbox and Xbox 360 games, like hundreds of games, and a lot of them do work on the Xbox series, and that backwards compatibility feature remains, it's excellent.
I think ultimately, if you are going to be creating an anniversary console, it's kind of got to be fully featured, and if the optical drive hadn't been there, that would have been very problematic.
Indeed.
Oliver, what do you make of this machine? Because there's something about it, isn't there?
I am very taken by this hardware. I am very, very fond of the kind of late 1990s, early turn of the millennium transparent plastic design. I think it's coming back, actually, with a number of products. I think people are very interested in that design. And it's a really striking way to exhibit a console, because you see all the internals. And with Xbox Series, because of the way they have it laid out, because they have the shielding arranged just so, you actually get a really good look at the internals with this console. Like, you get to see the heatsink, the disk drive, the fan assembly, the whole thing, the whole shebang, the power supply unit. It is a really, really cool unit, because it's not like multiple layers of plastic and shielding. It's basically just that one transparent plastic layer. And then all the components you'd want to see, except for the back of the unit, which John mentioned, which I think is probably a concession for maybe repairability or service, because I think transparent plastics tend to be a bit more brittle. So run into some problems there, possibly, which makes total sense, that I don't think it diminishes the look of the console from normal viewing angles at all. You know, talking about the viewing angles of a console like it's television, very fun, amusing to me. it's interesting, though. The only negative part of this announcement, outside of the fact that it's, you know, limited edition, limited quantities, all the usual hubbub, hullabaloo with these kind of transparent plastic consoles, similar to, I think, the PS4 Pro blue transparent plastic console that was also a limited edition, as well as the anniversary PlayStation 5 and PlayStation 5 Pro units that I think came out a couple of years ago, very limited quantities there, is that it's launching so late in this generation. I kind of think it's a bit of a miss there. I'd love to have had a more exciting configuration of Xbox Series a little bit earlier in the generation, when the platform was more relevant and when it wasn't at risk of being succeeded by Xbox Helix, right? Because that is just on the horizon. Like Rich, I can't imagine myself. I mean, I'm totally taken by this design, but I can't imagine myself buying a new Xbox console, given that it's, you know, pretty late in the cycle here, in addition to all the myriad other factors that go into this kind of decision. So yeah, I think that's a slight miss, but I understand 25th anniversary. Do something exciting in the hardware space for that, and I think this certainly justifies that that billing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I also think it's a nice celebration of like the frankly superb engineering that went into the Xbox Series consoles. There was so much clever stuff going on there. That was one of the highlights of our visit to Microsoft in 2020, John, where, you know, the actual designers were there to talk us through the design and to explain the thermal side of the situation, the amount of you know, heavy lifting that went into making this quiet console that packed so much performance. And yeah, just great stuff.
It's a great console, I think we can agree, right? Like, I think it's a really well-engineered box. And certainly, yeah, even though it's a bit monolithic in design, I do still think it's better looking than the PS5, which is it's a pretty ugly machine. Although the PS5 Slim without the disc drive in vertical orientation looks good. That's about the best I can say.
There's like a flow chart there of decisions that eventually arrive at a good looking console.
Yeah, but the one I want the most is the PS5 Pro with the disc drive. It don't look very good. It's very weird looking in your entertainment system.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that was the final topic of this particular discussion, and therefore it is the end of the show. We'll be back with a full episode of DF Direct. I say full episode, it is mostly going to be talking about Summer Game Fest. That's already been recorded. That's coming soon. But that's all from us on this one. So please do like, subscribe, share if you enjoyed the content. Patreon.com/Digital Foundry, DF supporter program. Lots going on there. Hope you enjoy that. Please consider supporting the team. But that's all from us on this one. We'll see you soon. But in the meantime, thanks for watching and supporting Digital Foundry.